The views and opinions expressed by the guests, callers, and hosts on this and all Rents Radio Network programs do not necessarily reflect or agree with those of the network, its commercial sponsors, its radio station affiliates, or internet broadcast platforms. In these controversial times, we believe the First Amendment and freedom of the press are absolutely essential to the survival of our nation. Thank you. And now, enjoy the program.
Allegedly a weekend that just occurred, although you couldn't prove it by me. It just went. The days are just rolling through. They're not even, you don't think of them as Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday often anymore. It's just an ongoing rush of time. It just keeps moving. It's not demarked by any particular, the sun goes down, sun comes up. It's still the same track. We have first up tonight, back with us, and we're very fortunate to have her back, is Nurse Anne, who was on last Friday for a full half hour, and we wanted to bring her back. She has left her most recent appointment, job, with a 700-bed hospital in New York. She'll be going on to another hospital in the near future after the holidays are over. And there was so much that she saw in there, and I believe the picture that she provided for us ought to be available in guests under our names. Look under the first hour and see if it's there. That was a stunning picture, and I have never seen anything like it. We'll talk something a bit more about that, and then we're going to talk about what is the COVID bioweapon injection doing to the human brain. Now, I hope somebody starts a social media page. Just name it, they're not the same. People have changed. And it's not just the stress of all this. We're all under stress. We get that. It's not PTSD. There's something going on. And it's very simple to point to one obvious factor. And that's the spike protein, which transits throughout the body, wherever the blood grows, and it goes into the brain and sets up microclotting and kills off micro portions of the brain. Depending upon where in the brain these cell deaths occur, you can get all kinds of changes in personality, attitude, memory, you name it. The brain is the master computer, and when that starts to suffer breakdowns, and these microclots are breakdowns, anything can happen to somebody's personality. Dr. Bhakti has also mentioned that every injected person who has gotten the mRNA vaccine will suffer severe damage in their bodies. Okay? And he's calling for an end to the vaccines. They're not vaccines. They're bioweapons. He's not going to get his wish. By the way, it's done. They have succeeded. They have injected over 5 billion people with over 13 billion injections. I say it's game, set, and match. They've done it. Well, they'll continue, and people are still getting the shots. They're getting their boosters dutifully. So those figures are going to only grow. And the more people injected, the more damage, the more trouble. Okay, Erica is with us again, as always. Are you there, young lady?
Yes, I am. Hi, Jeff. Happy Monday.
Yes, happy Monday.
It is Monday,
how's the,
right?
I don't know. I honestly, it's just they're just rolling right into one another. There's no demarcation anymore. It's crazy.
Yeah, time is distorted now.
Agreed. It's a factor of many things. Certainly, the deluge of information. I won't call it news. I won't call it necessarily the truth, but the deluge of information that we have to go through, all of us, you all of you out there, wherever you are in the world, you have to go through it, you have to try to make sense of it, you have to decide for yourself what is and what is not important, or what is it, what is not true. And that's the hardest game of all. So that said, let's say hello to Nurse Anne and bring her back on tonight. Hello, Nurse Anne, are you there?
Yes, I am here. Hello, Jeff and Erica, how are you?
Hi, Ann.
We're still here.
Good to have you back.
Good to have you back.
Yeah, you still have that German-Italian accent. I can hear it. All right.
I know. I can't shake it for anything at this point. It's going to stay, I'm afraid.
I hope so. All right. So how are you feeling after being out of that 700-room lunatic asylum? And I'm not saying everyone in there was crazy, but That'll make you crazy just being around that kind of an environment. You feeling better? You relaxed a little bit?
Yeah. Well, I noticed I was getting sick once I was working on my shift.
We noticed that, yes, right? That you were having problems occasionally.
So no matter how diligently I tried to protect myself in every which way, I was still getting sick. So I'm relieved in many ways to be out of there, because there's just such a huge level of exposure to people who have been vaxxed. Like we're at 5 and 6 vaccinations now for COVID.
Yeah, fully vaxxed, 5 or 6 shots. You got it.
And then they are getting the flu vaccination on top of all of those.
Mm-hmm.
So it's the hospitals are inundated with patients. There's numerous times where our hospital has been on divert because they cannot absorb the amount of patients that are actually coming to the emergency room, and they have to send them to another area hospital because they just can't handle the patient load. But all of the hospitals are having that same problem now. And an article came out there recently, like in the last week, basically saying that they're advising people that if you have flu symptoms or COVID-like symptoms, to try and stay at home and manage them as best you can before trying to hit the emergency room doors, because everybody's going to the ERs now.
But that, so, you know, when we were kids, we didn't do that. We stayed home and we toughed it out.
Yep.
Not anymore.
The problem now is it's a short staffing issue. And part of the problem is with that whole problem, they created a huge breakdown in the industry for nursing in particular, because the nurses who wanted to stay and work but didn't want to be vaccinated were basically fired. And the nurses who stayed ended up working like crazy hour shifts to the point where they ended up getting burnout. So they ended up leaving. And then the nurses who were getting close to retirement said, I'm out the door. I'm not dealing with this. So we have a medical system that's completely broken.
Let's break that down. Speaking of broken, we had 1/3 approximately of all professional healthcare workers in America refusing and rejecting the mandate. They said, go to hell, I'm not taking that shot. They left. Now we have, what you're saying, burnout cases, retirement people close to retirement, they're getting out. I won't say that's another third, but it's certainly a factor. So we may be down to 50% employment in a lot of hospitals compared to what it was 2, 3, 4 years ago.
Yeah, that's the issue, is that we don't have the staff. And the other side of the coin is We don't have the new nurses coming out of the nursing school either because they're not going into the nursing programs.
Really?
There's a couple of issues there. Some of them don't want to pursue the nursing career anymore. Some of them started and saw what happened during COVID, and they just didn't want any part of it. Some of them who were close to the end of graduating went on and went and sat their licensing exam and then said, I don't want to do nursing, and then went off and did some other career. And because they were forced to speed the program up so that they could get the nurses out in the workforce, the nurses who were brand new to the field got terrified because they didn't get the proper training. And they also decided, I don't want to do this anymore. So they're leaving. So it's the whole industry is broken. And then they can't get the faculty to teach the new nurses as well. I get messages every day on email if I would be interested in becoming a faculty member in a college to teach the nursing schools. Get the students through the program.
Right.
They don't have the faculty members there to teach.
If you wanted to do that, you might find yourself in the front of a classroom with empty chairs.
Well, that's the thing. Their students are just saying, yes, it might have been a promising career where you could have made money. A lot of people go into it for the wrong reasons anyway. They go in for the money, and they go in for the potential to travel all over the world. Those are the two wrong reasons to go into nursing, in my own honest opinion. But that's just me. You go into the nursing because you actually legitimately want to care and take someone to a higher level of function.
Right, return them to society so they can function. Absolutely.
Yeah.
But that's been taken away from you by the simple virtue of the fact that anyone who's taken these shots has been either killed off or severely wounded or at least incapacitated to a degree that makes life not pleasant for them. I see. Now, here, as far as availability of beds in hospitals, you were pretty full there, I know. Here, listen to this one.
Yes.
This is across country. The number of available Los Angeles County hospital beds has fallen to its lowest level of the pandemic. There are very few beds available. The result not only of the enduring threat of COVID-19 and the reemergence of flu and RSV, no mention of where the flu went for 2 years on vacation, but also the needs of a populace that put off non-emergency care. So based on the data collected from 90 hospitals, there were 242 adult beds available countywide. 242 beds in the entire county of Los Angeles available as of Monday. That's it. Now, do you know how many beds there are in America, so-called staffed hospital beds that are, you know, they're tended by nurses in all the hospitals in all the counties and all the states in America? There are about 900,000.
Wow.
About 900,000. Now, is that number still viable today? I don't know. But the problem is, with only 240 beds available in all of L.A. County, wow, you can see where this is all going. And staffing down to half of what it was. And they can't fly Filipinos in fast enough, I guess. And they're all vaxxed. No. That's the other problem. And most of the people who stayed behind working are vaxxed. All right. Erica, anything to add here? Jump in.
Well, you and I made some phone calls, was it last week or the week before, just to check on the status of some of the area hospitals. And I think we both got similar responses. They were hovering at the time around 90% full.
That's right.
That was 2 weeks ago.
Yeah. And the other issue is they're full because the elderly patients that are coming in and are having all these chronic problems with strokes and clots and other multiple, like the falls that they end up, you know, with fractures and things like that. They're in the hospital for months at a time. And the reason being that the skilled nursing facilities cannot take them. There's no placement. And We can speak to this personally because Tommy's mother, unfortunately, had to go to an area that was nearly 3 or 4 hours away when she left the hospital, because that was the closest location. Now, after that, we tried to bring her closer, and we got her within probably an hour of where we physically live. And then finally we get her into a long-term care facility, and they're even having issues with staffing and placement. So the issue is trying to get people into those skilled nursing facilities and extended care. You can't get them in. There's no place for them.
The reports I'm seeing indicate that a lot of these rehab facilities are the typically in the past it was an older clientele, elderly people that, you know, were not fit to go home. They needed to go somewhere, but they were, you know, didn't need to be in a hospital, but weren't well enough to be at home. Now they're saying that most of the clientele in these types of facilities are 40s and 50s.
Yeah. They're younger.
Much younger.
They're sicker.
Much younger.
They're sicker. Yeah, they were all the ones having strokes. They were all the ones having heart attacks. They were all the ones throwing clots having functional issues with their muscular, neuromuscular.
Neurology. Sure.
Yeah.
Now, when they come in, Maria, and they have clots, and I know that surgery is about the only thing you can do to try to remove clots. How common was that kind of procedure at that big hospital you just left? How many clots were being removed? Every day.
Every single day. And there was multiple. It wasn't just one surgery. It was multiples. The surgeons were going from 8 o'clock in the morning.
All day.
Till probably 8 o'clock in the evening. Because I was coming on shift, and I'd be hearing, oh, by the way, so-and-so is coming out of the OR. They'll be in PACU for recovery for about an hour, and then they'll be coming here.
So it's clot city everywhere.
Yeah. Oh, everywhere.
It's amazing.
Everywhere.
Yeah. And we must point out, by way of something we've already pointed out in the past, but it's worth repetition, is that they go in and they're able to remove a clot or two in a key place in a patient. At that same moment, there may be 8 or 10 or a dozen or more other clots forming in other locations in the body. So they're not going to escape. They've been shot up, 4, 5, 6 shots. They're just generating clots all over the place. And all you can do is try to take out
the
most aggressive.
Yeah, we had the woman who came back 3 different times. They'd remove a clot in one of her limbs, and then she'd be back next week with another clot just as long, if not longer, in the other limb, which would have happened over a week.
Wow. Are these vascular surgeons doing that kind of work?
Yeah.
Must be.
These
huh?
are the vascular surgeons. And they know what they're pulling out, too. That's the criminal piece of it all, is that they know what they're pulling out of those people, and it's not blood clots.
But you don't dare talk about that. Uh-huh.
They never say. They won't say. And they have them on the anticoagulant therapy the whole time they're in the hospital. It's a joke. Why?
Why bother? Do anything. Does no good.
It doesn't do a thing for you. You're better off having them on something like natokinase or something like that. At least then you might actually see some difference.
Yeah, everything I'm reading indicates that the best, I mean, but once these things form, you can't break them down. So the best defense is to stay ahead of allowing them to form. And you might escape to some degree the consequences of this.
Yeah. Now,
but the treatment has to start early. You have to stop them from forming in the first place. Mm-hmm. And I mean, most people, they're oblivious to the fact that this is even happening.
No, they're not. They're not told. They have no idea at all till they got a pain and they got a problem and they got a clot. And again, that's just
one. And they tell them, they tell them is you got a clot. We removed a clot. They never know. They don't even say blood clot. They actually just say, we removed a clot.
Interesting.
They're not technically lying then, are they?
No, that's funny. Yeah. Okay, so we have
I'll tell you, I should have gone into, been a legal consultant or something, huh?
Yeah, well, you could have. I think you were already doing that. spike proteins, remember, dear friends, go anywhere the blood goes and begin the process of microclotting right away. And whether these turn into major clots, major vascular obstructions, only time will tell. But the point is, when you do have something major and it has to be removed surgically, there may be, as I said, pardon the repetition, a dozen more forming that will bring you back, like you heard Nurse Ann say, in a week for another clot removal. So the health industry is teetering on the edge of, it seems to me, collapse. You got staff shortages, you got bed shortages, you got people coming back for repetitive surgical and other medical procedures because their health has been destroyed with these injections.
I don't watch television very often, but I don't know, in the last week or so I had it on and I noticed a commercial. I hadn't seen this before. It was for health insurance. I think it was Tufts Health Plan or something. And it was specifically for at-home care, long-term at-home care. And,
you know,
obviously it's targeting a population that is disabled to the point where they need in-home care. They're not sick enough to be in an actual hospital, but they can't really care for themselves well either.
They need meals. They need help to the bathroom. Whatever.
Right.
We've talked about that. And what was the ratio again?
Well, if you remember, if you guys remember that when this all started, it was all the elderly that were getting targeted initially. It was a lot of the elderly that were dying from all of this.
Mm.
But now it's the very people that are actually being disabled and crippled and maimed and end up dying from it are the people who would be looking after the elderly. They're normally the kids who have grown up, have their
50s.
Own family, and they're in their 40s and 50s, exactly. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And they would have been taking care of the elderly parents.
I don't know. Erica, where did we get that stat? One of our listeners wrote in and corrected us. We figured it was three people taken out of service, so to speak, to give care and comfort to those who are completely disabled and need around-the-clock care. 3-1. You got one person who's disabled at home. There'll have to be three people to split up the clock, 8, 8, and 8, or whatever.
But that really means nobody ever really gets an extended
break. No. But so
realistically,
it's real,
more like four and a half.
That's it.
People.
You got it. Yep.
Well,
so one goes down, Maria.
Yeah,
hold on. Let me ask this of Nurse Ann. If one goes down, Nurse Ann, and you've got 4.5 people out of circulation giving care to that person. Now, this is a private sector. This is not in a hospital setting. What happens to this society in 6 months to 12 months? And I think next year is going to be a terrible avalanche of fatalities, frankly. I think we're headed there right now. But you can't lose 4.5 people when one person becomes disabled. We'll call them disabled at home. It's just going to be a catastrophe, right?
Yeah, I did notice an explosion of job advertisements for home care. And a lot of nurses who hated the bedside nursing in the hospital kind of jumped at it because there was a lot of money incentives involved in that and stuff. But you know, the thing about it is in home care, the agency gets to send you anywhere they want to send you, and they won't send you out protected. You're basically on your own, so you could be going to some very shady areas to take care of people. And I know everybody needs to be taken care of, but I'm just saying you have to factor in your own welfare in this scenario. So I did home care,
point.
But I did it from the angle of hospice. And there was certain contracts that we places we went. But I'm telling you, your safety is put at risk in that scenario. So a lot, they did advertise, they heavily marketed for home care, but I don't think it's actually turning out to be as a desirable job as people who had not done it thought it was going to be.
Are they advertising these jobs as, Anne, are they advertising these jobs as live-in or just visit the house 8 hours a day?
Oh, no. It's usually you're visiting the house. And actually, you're not even getting a real, in that scenario, you're not even getting a registered nurse all the time for those 8 hours. Because she has probably 120 people on her roster that she has to go see. So they're getting that registered nurse. Yeah. If they're really, really lucky, they're getting that registered nurse for probably 1 to 2 hours, if they're really lucky.
Sounds like they're getting a janitor, so to speak.
So what they're getting is they're getting, usually they're getting trained nursing assistants. If you're hiring a private nurse, you are paying a lot of money. And not everybody can pay. That's all out of your own pocket. Insurance won't cover that. They don't cover that. Now, what's really interesting is from another angle, and this was happening prior to COVID, was the insurance companies used to hire case managers, and it was another job I did in my past life, and I worked for a couple of insurance companies, and what they would do is, because they looked at it from a cost-saving issue, they would look at the high-cost cases. So people who were prone to heart attacks, or had asthma, or had cardiac disease, or diabetes, or MS, or cancer, or any of those kind of diseases. Oh, addiction, too. That was another one. Those were viewed as high-cost cases. So what they would do is they'd assign a case manager, which is usually a nurse, and she'd have to be a registered nurse or at least an LPN, a licensed practical nurse, and they'd basically hire those nurses and say, you've got this caseload. This is high-cost cases. We want them better monitored, closely monitored. We want to see why we're spending this amount of money on these cases. And we need you to go out to the home. So periodically, you would have to go out to the home to meet with all these people because they were costing the insurance company money.
Erica, what did we see last week? Or maybe it was last month, I don't know, it was recent. We saw that insurance companies were no longer paying when people died, if they've been shot up or something. I remember there was a story about that.
Where
they were beginning to
reevaluate.
I believe so. They were beginning to reevaluate their payouts, and they were not paying out. I don't know how they predicated that decision on whether to pay or not to pay.
If I was a lawyer, I'd be all over that.
Hold on.
Hold on, Anne, one second.
What did you say, Erica? I don't want to miss that. What?
They were making some sort of exceptions or exclusions for people who were what they considered genetically modified. They had taken some sort of a gene transfection injection, and they were considered to be genetically modified, so that, based on that, they would not cover whatever complications or consequences came of that.
Now, this was health insurance or life insurance?
Yeah, this pertained to health insurance.
Okay. All right. So that's very interesting. If you've been GMO'd, they're not going to cover you. That's what some of the big companies
Jeff
are doing.
Jeff and Erica, I've got to weigh in on this one. I have to weigh in on this one because that statement now has just set me off. And now I'm seeing red. And the reason because I hear that, and I don't doubt it for a second, that's what they have the audacity to do. But I will tell you honestly, I was looking at alternative jobs to do, and I was thinking about going back into the field of being a case manager again for the insurance companies. And I cannot find one single insurance company that will hire a person if you're not vaxxed.
There you go.
So in their job description, they make sure that you, the person that they're looking to hire, is vaxxed. And not only that, if you live in a state that requires the mandatory boosters, you're required to get them too. I can show you
a double standard
where I saw that.
Yeah. Well, what's going on here? This is intentionally trying to destroy the healthcare field even further. There's no question. There's no other way to look at it. These people know what's going on. Oh, this is bad.
Mm-hmm. I can send you a job description. I looked at the job, and I actually considered actually doing the job. And then I, right at the bottom, it says the basic mandatory COVID vaccination. It requires, oh, by the way, no exemptions are accepted, by the way.
Wow. Uh-huh. Unreal.
It's going down in flames, dear friends. All
yeah,
by design. Yeah. Only 242 beds in all of Los Angeles County were available as of the story dateline, which is 2 days ago, I think. Unbelievable. We're on the absolute precipice, the edge of an unprecedented healthcare catastrophe in this country. They can't fly the Filipinos in quick enough. It won't happen.
The hospital that I was in, Jeff, was there was many nights there was no beds at all. Like no beds at all available. Because what would happen is, as I was saying once before, I said it on one of the other shows, was they created a scenario where they had a holding area down in the emergency room for the real sick patients who may have to have been intubated in the emergency room and couldn't make it to ICU because all the ICUs were full. Or they couldn't make it to the step-down units because they were full. So they ended up keeping them in the emergency room and creating a holding area within the emergency room and assigning one of their ER nurses to take on like a patient assignment, like a floor nurse would.
Interesting.
And that was sometime over the summer, right? Can you imagine heading into the winter?
Oh, it's constant now. It's absolutely constant. I mean, the problem is now they're turning people away. They just can't. They can't
really,
even hold
they say,
them in the emergency
take
room.
Them
they,
to
have, they have to divert.
To what, a veterinarian's office? Where are they going to divert? There's no room.
Actually, you may have better luck.
It could be.
But the area hospitals are all inundated now, so it's really a tough call. There'll be a time where even divert won't be an option. They'll probably be treating people outside on the street off the hospital just waiting to get seen. I don't know what's going to happen, but I know we're in a very dangerous area now where there's too many patients, not enough nurses. And the administration is not supporting the nursing staff. You're going to be seeing an awful lot of nursing strikes if you haven't already seen the message boards. There's a lot of strikes about to happen. Even here in this location, there's a lot of mumblings about a strike. So it's going to be we're in a very bad place at this point for healthcare. Your best option, honestly, is to try and treat yourself at home. Do the research, and then try and treat yourself at home as best you can. But there's scenarios where you won't be able to do that. You'll just, like the people who are, as you hear on the police reports, that are just falling for no apparent reason. They're automatically being taken to the hospital because there's no. They have to find out the reason for the fall.
Mm-hmm.
Usually it's an impending stroke or a clot was thrown or an aneurysm or something that causes them to take a fall that they were in perfect health before that and all of a sudden now they're on the floor.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a lot of calls. I've been listening on my own radio channel at home and I hear the same thing. I hear a lot of that.
It's striking.
It is, and now they're always explaining it as a fall. But then, if you could actually see that person and know that person and look at that person's chart, I guarantee you they're probably at 5 or 6 vaccinations,
right?
And they probably had it within a day of that fall. Mm-hmm. Or a week off that clock.
Yeah. I'm going to go back to this insurance issue again. Now, life insurance companies are claiming that they do not ask anyone's vax status, and it doesn't make any difference, and they will continue to pay when someone dies, whether they've had an experimental gene therapy injection or injections or not. I don't think they're going to be able to maintain that. I think the number of dead people are going to be that are insured will be far too many. In 6 months, they're going to have to
reevaluate it. Yeah, the insurance industry has been in trouble now for a year.
They're broke. I think they're completely broke.
I don't know how
they're operating.
Well, what they're doing is they're charging people more for health insurance now. That's one way they're trying to ameliorate their costs. They're charging people more for coverage. That's one way they're going to try and deal with it. But this is all, you can see where this is going. It's just not tenable. They can't maintain their viability as a quote, profitable company or corporation. And you got, let's just say in a worst case, 200 million Americans die or more. These companies are going to be gone. They're just going to have to, if you've taken the shots, and they're going to blame Pfizer and blame Moderna, whatever. It'll be a game. But they don't have the money.
Yeah. Well, they probably will blame them. But then why are they mandating that their new employees and all of their employees take the vaccine?
It's genocide.
God, if I was a lawyer, I'd be all over that one.
Yeah.
For the people who are listening out there tonight, I hope you're paying attention to that. Because I pull those job ads. You can see them. Anybody can get on them. Pull those job ads if some insurance company is flat out refusing to pay a life insurance policy for your loved one that was killed because of those vaccines, and you bring it to your lawyer and you show them that same company is mandating their own employees to get that vaccine.
It's unreal.
That's the biggest hypocritical move I've ever heard.
Well, it's a deadly hypocritical move. We have to remember that the plug has been pulled on the formerly United States of America. It is being taken down. And I've been saying this for a long time now. And the more I watch, and the more, I don't see how you can miss it if you're really alert. This country is being taken down in every way, in every day. I see something new about how it's just coming apart. This is all just teetering, and it's going to fall over the cliff here pretty soon. And it's going to be chaotic. Chaos everywhere. Okay. What about people changing? Now, we've discussed this a little bit before, Nurse Anne. You told us about some of the staff, how their general attitudes had changed. Can you go back through that again? Because I think this is important. A lot of people are seeing friends, loved ones, coworkers, people in an office, whatever. It's not the same. It's different. People have been impacted by this. Is it microclotting in the brain doing damage to the brain? Maybe. Maybe there's some other factor involved. What are your thoughts on all that? Change. Why have they changed?
Well, I remember I told you the story about this really jolly, jovial 23-year-old nurse. And she went and
tell us again.
Vaccinated.
That's fine. Go ahead.
Yeah. And she went and got vaccinated. And she got the two Pfizer shots because the hospital was mandating the shots at the time. And she went, and she had to call out sick right after the second one because she couldn't get off her couch. She couldn't walk. And when she finally did come back to work, she was hobbling like an old lady. And she jokingly said about it that she was like, "You wouldn't believe it, my guys. I was like an old lady." She's 23 years of age. This is the same girl who was running every day in the gym, had an active life with a steady boyfriend. Now, fast forward 2 years, the same nurse, I saw her before I left, and she's really not going out anymore. She's not jolly or happy or jovial. We used to, like, you know, we've been taking care of the patients, and we'd say what, ask the patients what kind of music they liked, and we'd find something on, you know, and play it for them, and it used to be like to lift their spirits and stuff, you know, while we're doing their care. And, well, this nurse has completely changed. She's not the same person. She's high strung, super stressed out all the time. And doesn't really partake in going out now much with anybody. She sees her family a little bit. Her sister got married, had a kid. She was all happy about that. And now she rarely sees her own family. Like, she's just cutting herself off from the world. She's isolating herself. And all
does she know? Does she know there's something wrong with her? Does she know she's changed?
No, she doesn't. I don't think she sees the change. She doesn't see it.
Wow.
No. Wow. And then the others are just, like, really high-strung. They're always stressed out. There's an indifference as well, which is a shame. That, you know, when you go into nursing, you should have the empathy and the compassion. And
there's an indifference,
huh?
You
want to be there, you know?
Yeah, that's a pretty pregnant word, indifference. That's a bad one. We've got a lot of bad ramifications. What do you think it might be? We've talked about this a lot, Erica and I, this idea of people's personalities being affected and impacted by these injections. Do you have any thoughts you can add to this?
Well, I think the vaccine, there was definitely the change in the staff happened after a lot of the staff ended up getting vaccinated. People who wouldn't be stressing out were stressing out all the time. And they just get upset over nothing, really. Hmm. So I think the vaccine had the capabilities of crossing over the blood-brain barrier. And I think it did actually affect parts of their brain in the way they think. And I think it probably affected those people, like the doctors and the nurses and the higher intellectual people in those areas, where their personalities now were changed.
Erica, what do we think about possible causes of what Nurse Anne is describing here?
Yeah, well, both the lipid nanoparticle is known to cross the blood-brain barrier with its cargo, being the mRNA, and then the spike protein itself. If it's being produced in some other part of the body, it can still make its way to the brain. And that both of those things will cause inflammation, and depending on where the inflammation is, you know, if it's that frontal lobe, that's really where somebody's personality manifests. So it's not surprising. A brain inflamed, you're going to have behavioral issues, personality changes, memory issues.
Memory issues is a big one, actually.
Yeah.
That's a biggie.
Yeah, short-term memory, gone.
Yeah.
Gone.
Yeah. And then you see the little old people becoming violent.
You described that. Yes.
Yeah.
There's a hostility.
I mean, on another day, she wouldn't be able to get fight her way out of a wet paper bag. Uh-huh. But apparently, she was having superpowers and was ready to take a whole team of security guards down. It was incredible to see. I mean, it was incredible in so many ways because she was so sickly, but yet she had these superpowers but wasn't thinking straight and was extremely angry. And a lot of people are angry.
Hostility. That's a common thing we hear about. Hostility.
Yeah.
Antagonistic.
Yeah.
Nasty. Mean. Inconsiderate. Whatever.
There was a big push for, at one point, like, the patients were becoming so hostile that they were, basically, there was a big push for, they call them sitters in the hospital, you know, where they actually they just are employed just to sit with the patients. They don't do anything medical. They're just hired to make sure that the patient stays safe the entire time. Well, they couldn't get enough sitters in our hospital. And then the ones that did get, they were like, I'm out of here. I'm not doing this. Because they're getting hit. They're getting spit at. Things have been thrown at them. There's foul.
Wow.
Like, people who were church-going people, I mean, talk about 360. People who are church-going Christians that never said a bad word in their life, and their family is like, I don't know what's wrong with my grandma. She never was like this. She was going to church like 5 days a week. And now she had a potty mouth that you couldn't even begin to describe. I mean, it's incredible, you know? And that happened on numerous cases. Numerous cases. And it was funny, one guy caught himself one night, and he was really, like, he was really very hard to work with. I gave it my best shot, but very difficult to work with. And at one point, he realized that he really was pushing my buttons. He really was. And he goes, you know, I really am very sorry. I'm not normally like this. So he identified with the fact that something had changed within him.
Uh-huh.
But he couldn't figure out what it was.
Hmm.
But
this
is
a job
that I ever noticed.
That's fascinating. One person admitted it. This is a job for Xanax, right? Are they prescribing a lot of antipsychotics and mind altering things?
Yeah, they are, and it's a whole explosion in that industry alone. They're prescribing anti anxiety medications and sleep aids, a lot of sleep aids, because they're claiming that because they're in the hospital, they're out of their home environment, so they're experiencing delirium. Mm-hmm. So because of the delirium, it's causing them to act out and be anxious, and they're not getting enough sleep, so they're saying it's potentially insomnia, and for that reason, they're basically prescribing all of these kind of drugs. So a patient could be having Xanax, Valium, Frazodone, Benadryl. In worst case scenario, if those three don't knock you out, throw on Benadryl, give that a go. Benadryl I'd sleep for nearly 17 hours on Benadryl alone.
Now it's over the counter.
Now it's over the counter. Huh?
Yeah.
And also, people should really be careful with that drug because that brings on early Alzheimer's and dementia signs and symptoms. I actually have a very good book that I kept when I did my gerontology rotation. And there's a lot of over-the-counter drugs that people can get that can cause an awful lot of problems with the people's brain and how it affects their brain. And the elderly population, they're very susceptible to this.
All right. This has been a really great comedy hour. That's wonderful. Wonderful news. I don't know how much longer this so-called healthcare system honestly can hold itself together. If that many people, and I know there are a lot of people who don't feel good, we won't call them disabled at home, but they stay home because they don't feel well. I went out yesterday to the store, and there was, I'd say, honest, Sunday afternoon, 25% of the traffic that I'd normally see. And I've seen this before. They're just not going out. And I don't think the Super Bowl was yesterday. So they were not. There's a lot of people who just don't want to go out. They don't feel well. And your statement about somebody in the bed spitting on the sitter next to them, that's damn dangerous.
Right. Yeah.
All right.
Yeah, the amount of things that have happened, we had somebody... it's disgusting. But we had somebody throw a urinal bottle at one of the security guards one night.
Oh, boy. Gee whiz.
And you can only imagine, what's going on there. But these are people that normally would not have if you talk to the family will come in, and they're consistent. This is the consistent thing where they're not, they were not like that. They were never like that. And, of course, and some families will blame it on the hospital system in that they think that the hospital is, you know, giving them these weird drugs and making them act out like that. But that actually is not the case. What happens is they act out like that first, and then, unfortunately for them, they get the kiss of death, and which is then they get the drugs put on their charts where the nurses are basically giving them all of these anti-anxiety drugs, Prozac, the Valium, the SSRIs, benzos, anything you SSRIs, and pain medications on top of that, and then all of the sleeping aids that you could possibly think about. So now they're coming in, and their family member is completely snowed. Like, they're laying in the bed, and they're like Sleeping Beauty now. But that's because they're all,
drugged into oblivion. Yeah, I got it.
Yeah.
All right, we have to wrap this up. Briefly, you are an extraordinary hero. You're not shot up. You're putting yourself at risk by being around these people. We all understand, those who listen to this program, understand the reality of shedding very much. You've been impacted by it. You've gotten spiked once or twice, I'm sure. Are you going to go back into this again, do you think, huh?
I'm going to go back into the hospital, but the patients I'm going to be dealing with are the ones that are actually in a medical observation unit, and they're waiting either to send them either to a unit that has not opened up a bed for them yet, or they're just holding there till they get better and we're sending them home.
Well, maybe you could take care of the patients who have already died. Then you won't have any problems. That's a joke.
I know. I just, the thing is as soon as I look in the charts and I see they're vaccinated.
Yeah.
For me, okay, I shake my head and I go, okay.
Last quick question.
What do I do now?
How common is it for a vaxxed patient to be either reported by family or to be obviously changed, according to people who know them, their own physicians or whatever, who have been changed, who are not the same? What's your, just to give me a guesstimate on a percentage, of all the people who take the shots, how many of them are manifesting personality changes to one degree or another? What would be a guess?
All of them. All of them. They're flat out 100%. That's not even a difficult question to answer. 100%. They're all acting out in some way. They're all changed in some way.
Dr. Sakari Bhakti just said every injected mRNA vaxxed person has suffered or will suffer severe damage to their body. And that's part of it, for sure. Remember, the S protein goes anywhere, and we think the mRNA will go anywhere with it. And we also worry that the mRNA has the ability to replicate itself. So
yeah, we do have the evidence for that now. A couple studies have shown that it is being released in exosomes.
Wow. That's right. I remember now.
Well, I was saying that I don't know if I said it on your show, but I think I did. But every night I worked, there was a code call in either peds or OB. Every night.
Pediatrics.
Either a baby was born and not able to breathe, or a peds patient came in and was having difficulty breathing or having heart problems.
A child. Yeah.
Yeah.
Unreal. All right. Nurse Ann, thank you very much. And Merry Christmas to both of you, and you have made a wonderful contribution to this audience and to every patient you've interacted with, so thank you very much.
Yeah, thank you, Ann, for your incredible dedication. Thank you.
Thank you both. Thank you both, and just keep getting the word out. That's all. Maybe there is a few people we can still save. I don't know. But
if you save one, we're happy.
Been wonderful.
Well, thank you.
Good.
All right. Okay.
And
take
Merry
care.
Merry Christmas to both of you.
Thank you, Ann. Thank likewise.
Thanks.
Okay.
Bye-bye
good
now.
Night.
All right. Well, there's a lot to think about. This health system.
Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas for a lot of people, I'm afraid.
Yeah.
This health system is on the edge. And so are a lot of people. They're not going to be here next year. I hate saying that. Maybe I shouldn't say that. But it would go against everything I know, everything I read, everything we study. Erica's got her head buried in papers all day and monitoring groups and just researching all the time. This thing is so out of control, ugly, and deadly now. And that's not to say there aren't little cells and areas in the country where things appear to be somewhat normal, because people, A, are not going to admit that they have anything wrong to anybody. It's private. They say, I'm fine. Oh, I got my shots. I'm fine. Who's going to admit that? No. So there's denial, too. You got that. And it's just, this is bad out there. And dear friends, we'll keep reporting you to you the best we can. That's all we can do. Keep in mind, when you have holiday meals with your vax counterparts, the opposites, there are issues that need to be thought out beforehand. Don't wait until afterward. And it's okay if you make a decision that, unfortunately, angers some of your family. You've got to think maybe for them. They're not thinking anymore. Remember, they're living in denial. Oh, nothing wrong with those shots. I'm fine. Are you really? Don't know.
These boosters, I guess, are pretty potent in
aren't
terms of their shedding.
Double? I think they're double. Somebody
said a double dose of two different types of spike, and then quite often these people are taking a flu shot at the same time.